And now it's time for the Earth First Update. All the environmental news you can use, and I suggest that you have a pencil and paper handy, because there might be something that comes up that you want to write down. Some date, some time, some location, some website. You might want to make a note of it. All right, let's get to our announcements. Join us for a rally tomorrow to save the Delta and Northern California rivers. It's taking place at noon on the west steps of the State Capitol building in Sacramento, California. That's on the Capitol Mall at 10th between L and N Streets. Please join Friends of the River and our partners for a rally at the State Capitol to fight the proposed Delta water tunnels. Bring your friends, bring your family, bring your neighbors to help show our united opposition to the governor's water tunnel. We expect this disastrous plan will be unveiled by state agencies on Friday morning. That's tomorrow morning, December 13th. This unprecedented water and land grab, given the misleading title of the Bay Delta Conservation Plan, should be called the Bay Delta and Rivers Destruction Plan. If these two huge $25 billion, 30-plus mile-long tunnels are approved and built, massive quantities of fresh water will be taken out of the Sacramento River before it ever reaches the Delta, to be delivered to pumping plants to go south, further subsidizing corporate agriculture and runaway development. The water to fill these twin monstrosities will have to come from somewhere, and you can kiss goodbye to flows from upstream reservoirs for fish preservation purposes. We can kiss goodbye to flows for anglers, rafters, or recreation. Thousands of family farms, ranches, family homes, and recreational cabins along our rivers will go too. 40 years of hard-fought and successful campaigns to preserve free-flowing rivers in the state and National Wild and Scenic River Acts, those are going to go. And moreover, you and I, the taxpayers, can kiss goodbye to hundreds of billions of dollars needed to build the legacy our governor wishes to leave us. His tunnel vision of completing his father's almost identical peripheral canal plan that was voted down by the voters in 1982. And let me tell you, I voted no on that one. It's not possible to overstate the threat the tunnels pose to all our California rivers and the river conservation battles won by you, our partners, and Friends of the River since 1973. If we win this battle, stop the tunnels, plenty of other battles will remain for us to fight. But if we lose the battle over the tunnels, we may wind up losing not only the Delta, but most of our Northern California free-flowing rivers. Want further information? Go to www.friendsoftheriver.org or go to Sacramento tomorrow, December 13th at noon on the west steps of the Capitol building and rally to save the Delta. Also coming up this weekend, the Coyote Creek cleanup will be happening on Saturday, December 14th from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., and it might go a little longer. Friends of Coyote Creek Watershed are committed to the restoration of the steelhead fisheries on Coyote Creek in Santa Clara County. As part of their community outreach efforts, they are sponsoring a creek bank cleanup of trash, and that's going to follow the city dismantlement of a homeless encampment. They want folks to meet at Tully Road Ball Fields on the south side of Tully Road at Galveston in San Jose. Volunteers must wear sturdy, closed-toed footwear. It is highly recommended that you wear long pants, long sleeves, and a hat. If you want further information, contact Richard McMurty, and his email address is richard@sccreeks.org. Once again, that's Saturday, December 14th, 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. And meet at the Tully Road Ball Fields on the south side of Tully Road at Galveston in San Jose. And you can go to www.friendsofcoyotecreekwatershed.org or www.sccreeks.org for further information. The California Department of Public Health advises against eating mussels or other bivalve shellfish from Monterey or Tamales Bays. The California Department of Public Health is advising consumers not to eat recreationally harvested mussels, clams, or whole scallops from anywhere in Monterey Bay or inner Tamales Bay in Marin County. The latter includes the area between Millerton Point and Cypress Point. Dangerous levels of paralytic shellfish poisoning toxins have been detected in mussels from these regions. The naturally occurring PSP toxins can cause illness or death in humans and animals. This warning is in addition to the annual mussel quarantine that was extended on October 31st for northern Humboldt County. The quarantine remains in effect and applies to the region between Del Norte Humboldt County line and the northern jetty at the entrance to Humboldt Bay. Humboldt Bay itself is not included in the quarantine extension. This warning does not apply to commercially sold clams, mussels, scallops, or oysters from approved sources. State law permits only state-certified commercial shellfish harvesters or dealers to sell these products. Shellfish sold by certified harvesters and dealers are subject to frequent mandatory testing. The shellfish leases in Tamales Bay north of Cypress Point remain open for harvesting. That is if you are a commercial shellfish harvester. To receive detailed and updated information about shellfish poisoning and quarantines, call the California Department of Public Health's toll-free shellfish information line, and that is 800-553-4133, 800-553-4133. And if you'd like to go online for additional information, go to California Department of Public Health Marine Biotoxins Mussels Frequently Asked Questions at www.cdph.ca.gov. And up in the northern country, Rising Tide Seattle has held a solidarity protest against megalodes in this story by Brendan Kelly of The Slog and carried on the Earth First Newswire. Bertha, Seattle's deep bore tunnel digger, isn't the only mammoth controversial piece of equipment that's stuck in the Northwest these days. Recently, about a dozen climate change activists from Rising Tide Seattle showed up at the Bellevue offices of RCCI, a subsidiary of General Electric, to protest the shipment of a megalode evaporator that is currently bogged down in eastern Oregon, trying to make its way to the tar sands oil fields in Alberta, Canada. Activists and members of the Umatilla and Warm Springs tribes have been blockading the megalode shipment for weeks, which can only travel at night because its size disrupts traffic. This thing is 40 stories tall, said activist Kyle Miskell on his way to the office occupation this afternoon. It's like they're shipping a skyscraper and it's going through reservation areas against the wishes of the Native Americans. The Alberta tar sands are the most environmentally destructive projects on the planet right now, he added. As long as companies like RCCI are helping to develop the tar sands, they can expect resistance. This evaporator is one of three that was scheduled to leave the port of Umatilla in late November, but has faced a series of blockades, including people locking themselves to the rig and one Umatilla woman, a 60-year-old grandmother, lying down on the road. She was arrested and charged with disorderly conduct. Adam Gaia of Rising Tide Seattle says that due to the delays and some weather issues, the megalode has only moved 100 miles since late November, setting the timeline for shipping the evaporators back several weeks. People are digging in their heels about this because both GE and Omega Morgan are looking for a permanent route to ship equipment to the tar sands fields and the roads where they can make modifications, Gaia said. This is a test run for them, and folks feel like if we can prevent or significantly delay these loads from arriving in Alberta, we might be able to shut off one of their last available routes. Earlier this year, 28 members of the Nez Perce tribe, including 8 members of the tribal council, were arrested in Idaho for a similar blockade. The Nez Perce, working with environmental lawyers, secured a court injunction against shipping the evaporator through tribal lands until a full impact study, including effects on tribal culture, could be completed. So General Electric and its shipping contractor, Omega Morgan, have set their sights on this new route, which activists are currently trying to obstruct. While Rising Tide held its brief protest at Bellevue, Miskell said that this was intended to be a high-profile, low-risk action, and nobody planned to get arrested. Rising Tide also protested at an office in Portland. Rising Tide is the same group that found itself the target of lurking FBI agents and informants this summer. Agents dropped by people's homes and places where they volunteer and work, and activists endured the squirrely company of confidential informant Robert Childs, who has previously been convicted of child molestation, twice for rape, and also for failure to register as a sex offender. Miskell told me another story about Childs shortly before he was outed as an FBI informant. He had been badgering a Rising Tide activist in front of a public library about making bombs. He said, "Are you interested in learning about how to make bombs?" Miskell said. She said, "No." "You have some chemistry background. Are you sure you wouldn't be interested in making bombs?" She said, "No." He kept going on, and she told him he was harassing her and told her to leave her alone. The last they'd heard, he was living in a modified school bus in Florida, moving it every few days so he wouldn't have to register as a sex offender. The main thing we want to get across to these people today, Gaia said in front of the action in Bellevue, is that every route they have tried has faced resistance, Gaia said. They cannot find a permanent route, so they'd better give up. Activists say people are gearing up for further blockades in Oregon and Idaho. The situation on the ground is changing very quickly, Gaia said. There will be more activism to come. An Australian anti-logging blockade has entered its second day in this story from Fearless Summer Australia and the Earth First Newswire. For the second day, 40 conservationists have maintained a forest protest action at Stony Creek in East Gippsland. Police search and rescue arrived at the site this afternoon. They proceeded to tie off cables connected to a tree sit to release the logging machinery. Police climbed the tree sitter's tree, removing the platform and the protesters' personal belongings, including blankets, food, and water. The tree sitter remains perched on branches at the top of the tree. Two people are still at the top of tripods on the road, continuing to block access to log trucks. Logging contractors have begun felling trees within the logging area. The commitment of these dedicated people willing to face arrest or difficult conditions in the treetops demonstrates their resolve to see our forests and endangered wildlife protected for the future, said Miranda Gibson, spokesperson for Still Wild, Still Threatened. The destruction of forests that are home to threatened wildlife displays repeated disregard for the government's own scientists and is an affront to the taxpayer who foots the bill, said David Caldwell of the Goongarra Environment Center, or GECCO. And 1,500 and more mink have run free in Italy. This is an anonymous claim of responsibility translated from Italian from Biteback and the Earth First Newswire. On the night of December 8th, we entered a mink farm at the Carzago Riviera in Brescia. Yeah, that's in Italy somewhere. The presence of many guard dogs, two guards, and security systems did not discourage us. A passage for the mink was created by cutting part of the fence and demolishing some protective slabs. From the cages, we removed all the tags with information used to trace the history of each individual animal, especially those mink intended for breeding. There were four mink in each tiny cage. These prisons, shrouded in fog, hide the suffering of millions of individual animals. We opened and damaged cages in 7 out of the 8 sheds. We were interrupted by the arrival of two guards, awoken by the cries of the freed mink. We were chased and shot at with rifles, probably loaded with rock salt shells. Running through sheds among a 1,000 little eyes that glowed in the dark under cover of night, we began our escape. Many animals have been killed and skinned. Many others will be recaptured. Only some will find freedom. How can you have 1,000 words against animal exploitation and not make a simple gesture that leads to freedom for animals from places of torture? This simple action that anyone could do is part of a struggle for the complete closure of these farms of death. This fight is not limited to farms, but is against all forms of exploitation and domination, and it is for this reason that we have chosen to take direct action. Liberation that comes through a democratic and parliamentary theater, with all the many forms of delegation, spectacle, and social peace, is only a semblance of change or exploitation that has taken on a new appearance. Do not await for the arrival of larger cages, but instead immediately destroy the existing cages. Farms in Italy are increasing, growing bigger and stronger, and now more than ever it is crucial to resist the opening of new farms and close those already open. These farmers will not sleep soundly at night despite all the security measures. Someone will always be able to enter their concentration camps. To those 1,000 little eyes glowing in the dark, run, mink, run. We define terrorist. Who is a terrorist? Someone who decides to liberate animals, even knowing that not all will survive, but giving them a chance of freedom? Or someone who locks those animals in cages to breed, to kill, and to skin them, to turn them into a fur coat? Animals deprived of their freedom, their subjectivity, and individuality should live free, but instead spend most of their lives locked up in a cage, and then are vivisected, tortured, and killed to become a guinea pig on which to test, to become a mere commodity, a product, a fur coat, or a piece of meat. And here's the update from the Buffalo Field Campaign. Update from the field. We are pleased to report that, although incredibly frigid, the past week has been a good one for the buffalo. Our patrols report little sign of hunters and no dead buffalo. We experienced nearly a full week of the mercury falling well below zero, with one of the nighttime temperatures dipping down to a brisk minus 43. Winter is definitely here now and has our full attention. Invigorated by the cold, frost-rimmed volunteers have been hard at work in the field and around the cabin watching out for the buffalo and monitoring migration corridors while simultaneously keeping the home fires burning, thawing frozen pipe, shoveling snow, and doing everything else that it makes this place run. As we huddle around our warm fires, our thoughts and hearts go out to the animals that live in these intense climates and have no fires or shelters, no other choice but to brave these conditions or succumb to the numbing cold. If winter were our only antagonist, survival would still be a major accomplishment for adult and subadult buffalo, while buffalo calves have a 50-50 chance of even making it to their first birthday. Unfortunately, thoughtless man-made plans intend to compound the difficulties of simply trying to stay alive. On top of state and treaty hunts, the Montana Department of Livestock has plans to capture, vaccinate, and kill buffalo in the Hebgen Basin, while in the Gardner Basin, Yellowstone National Park, the Intertribal Buffalo Council, and the Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes are planning to capture wild buffalo and transport them to slaughter facilities. For ecologically extinct wild buffalo, it doesn't matter who is doing the killing or whose slaughter facilities they end up in. The end and senseless result is the same. Help us stop the slaughter. Help these herds flourish. Sadly, Yellowstone National Park, one of the main killers of America's last wild buffalo, has entered into agreements with the Intertribal Buffalo Council and the Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes, and will begin handing over captured wild buffalo to these entities for direct shipment to tribal slaughter facilities. Both the ITBC and the CSKT are partners in the highly controversial Interagency Bison Management Plan, and the Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes is also one of the tribes that harvest wild buffalo under treaty rights. Yellowstone will be thrilled if the public takes the position that if the tribes are getting them, all is well. Not so. Yellowstone is using the tribes to try and shift blame away from themselves, and there are many other tribes and tribal members who are absolutely opposed to the Intertribal Buffalo Council and CSKT entering into these nefarious contracts. For ecologically extinct wild buffalo, the end is the same. The main point is that buffalo shouldn't be going to slaughter at all. Slaughter is carried out as a management tool of the IBMP under the idea of surplus buffalo. There are no surplus buffalo. Under the Interagency Buffalo Management Plan, the agencies and tribes have agreed to a population target objective of 3,000 animals. That's it. Anything over that is considered surplus by the IBMP. The 3,000 bison objective is not based on science, biology, ecology, nothing but the convenience of the managers involved. And they're also looking for volunteers if you want to go and freeze your butt off in Montana. It is beautiful and they're nice folks to be with. And it is challenging to go out cross-country skiing and snowshoeing out in Montana when it's minus 43. It probably warms up to maybe 10 or 20 during the day, maybe. You can find out information about the Buffalo Field Campaign at www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. Be sure and check out their What We Need pages, because they certainly need stuff. And when you get it, and if you can't figure out what to send, just send money to the Buffalo Field Campaign, P.O. Box 957, West Yellowstone, Montana. Their zip code is 59758. If you have any questions, give them a call at 406-646-0070. And do remember that the Buffalo Field Campaign is the only group working in the field every day in defense of the last wild buffalo in the United States. And here's some news from down below. Tasmania has created new anti-protest laws. In this story by Patrick Billings of The Examiner, as found on the Earth First Newswire. In a hardline Australian first, environmental protesters who enter Tasmanian workplaces will face mandatory jail terms under a Liberal government. In a key platform of the Liberals' forestry policy, illegal protesters would also be hit with a $10,000 on-the-spot fine, which is a 26-fold increase, for invading a workplace. Under the crackdown, corporations that, quote, incite or encourage this illegal behavior would attract fines of up to $100,000. kickstarting his party's election campaign recently, opposition leader Will Hodgman said, "We will send a very clear and strong message to people who engage in illegal protests and who cause Tasmanians jobs. Under the Liberals, there will be no get-out-of-jail-free card if you repeatedly invade a workplace." The tough law and order stance comes just months out from the next state election. It also coincides with the federal government's reaffirmed pledge to unwind the landmark Tasmanian Forest Peace Deal that was meant to end 3 decades of forestry warfare. Under the protest policy, first-time offenders who enter or impede access to a workplace will face on-the-spot fines of $10,000. Second-time offenders will serve a 3-month mandatory jail term at a minimum. Fines up to $50,000 and 5 years of jail could be slapped on protesters who damage property. Environmental organizations that encourage such behavior could face a crippling $250,000 fine. Mr. Hodgman said protesters would also be liable to pay for any economic loss caused by their actions. The Liberals would, quote, instruct police and emergency services to recover the costs of dealing with illegal protest activity, unquote, he said. Currently, illegal protests carry maximum fines between $390 and $650 under nuisance and trespassing offenses. Both offenses carry jail terms, but these are rarely, if ever, applied to protesters without criminal records. Hodgman said it would be necessary to create the new offense of invading or impeding access to a workplace. It is unclear how such legislation might affect industrial actions unrelated to forestry protests. Tasmania is not the only jurisdiction cracking down on activists. Victoria's Liberal government has proposed $3,000 fines for people protesting in logging areas and $8,660 fines for ignoring an exclusion order. Last year, Russian President Vladimir Putin introduced $9,000 fines for unsanctioned protests, and Spanish legislators are considering $900,000 fines for people who protest near the Spanish Parliament. And moving to the North Country, Algonquins erect land protection camp to stop illegal logging. And this is from a story from the Berry Lake Solidarity, as found on the Earth First Newswire. This last spring, Quebec's Ministry of Natural Resources, without meaningfully consulting the Algonquins of Berry Lake, issued permits for the 2013-14 operating year to Resolute Forest Products and other large logging companies who have subsequently clear-cut vast tracts of forest this past summer and fall up to last week when the Algonquins stopped the unauthorized logging, which has been taking place in violation of signed agreements with the First Nation. Resolute Forest Products and other logging companies have already damaged many sensitive area sites on the Berry Lake Trilateral Agreement territory, including sensitive area sites, which the Quebec Ministry of Natural Resources and the logging companies know to be of particular cultural and ecological importance. Today, the Algonquins have erected a land protection camp within the La Vérendrye Wildlife Reserve at the Poygan Sector to stop unauthorized logging from damaging Algonquin cultural sites and critical wildlife habitat until an already agreed-upon measures to harmonize process is reestablished on an urgent basis. The Algonquins of Berry Lake are demanding that the Quebec government cooperate in a measure to harmonize process to identify and protect cultural and ecological sites, honor the 1991 landmark Berry Lake Trilateral Agreement and related 1998 agreement with Quebec on co-management and resource revenue sharing, among other issues. And here in California, bear poachers have received stiff sentences in an El Dorado courtroom. Two Northern California men have been sentenced to fines and jail time for unlawfully killing bears and selling their gallbladders and other parts for profit. Peter George Vitale, 56, of Pioneer, California, and Arthur Martin Blake, 59, of River Pines, pleaded no contest to misdemeanor charges of illegally taking wildlife for profit in an El Dorado County courtroom. The court ordered Vitale to pay $12,500 fine and Blake to pay $5,000. Both men will be required to serve 30 days in jail and were sentenced to an additional 3-year probationary period. This case is an example of the challenges our officers face, said California Department of Fish and Wildlife Lieutenant Stacy Lefebvre. Heavy fines and jail time send a strong message to poachers who unlawfully take and profit from California's natural resources. Vitaly and Blake were arrested by CDFW officers in April 2013 after they were found to be in possession of 20 large bear claws and three bear gallbladders in the El Dorado National Forest. Evidence developed during the investigation suggested the suspects recently killed three bears, likely a sow and her two cubs. The claws, liver, and gallbladder had been removed from the sow, and only the liver and gallbladder had been removed from the younger two bears. California Fish and Game law prevents the sale, possession, or purchase for sale of any bear part, including claws and gallbladders. Bile contained inside bear gallbladders is believed by some to have medicinal properties and is sold on the black market. Under California law, possession of more than one bear gallbladder is prima facie evidence that the bear gallbladders are being possessed for sale. And if you want for more information, go to www.dfg.ca.gov. And in biological diversity news, California's lone wolf has returned. ORS7 weekends in the Golden State. Wandering Wolf ORS7 made history almost exactly 2 years ago when he first crossed the line from Oregon into California and stayed for 15 months, becoming the first wild known wolf to live in the Golden State in 90 years. This year, he's made two forays south, most recently on December 7th for a brief day trip. His repeat visits support advocates' calls for state protection for all wolves entering California. Gray wolves are California natives, but were driven to extinction here in the mid-1920s. In February 2012, the Center for Biological Diversity and three allies filed a petition with the State Fish and Game Commission seeking full state protection for gray wolves. The commission agreed that listing might be warranted and asked the State Department of Fish and Wildlife for a 12-month status review. That review is done, and agency officials have indicated they're leaning against listing, largely because OR7 had left the state. Scientists have identified more than 50,000 square miles of suitable wolf habitat in California, so no one should be surprised that OR7 finds it suitable too, said Amarok Weiss, the Center for Biological Diversity's West Coast Wolf Organizer, and hopefully other wolves will follow. And that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. The Earth First Update is presented every Thursday evening on Free Radio Santa Cruz. I want to thank you for listening. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio and is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. If you'd like to download or listen to a podcast of this broadcast, you can tune in tomorrow afternoon to Free Radio Santa Cruz at 3 o'clock for a rebroadcast, or go to radioforall.net, and you can find the Earth First Update there. If you're living in Moscow, Idaho, you can catch the Earth First Updates on Monday nights at 9:30. That's Radio Free Moscow, KRFP, Idaho, at their new high-power frequency of 90.3 FM. So hope you get out there and do some good for the world, and tune in next Thursday evening for another edition of the Earth First Update.